Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome back to Renee's Heart to Heart. This is Renee, and I'm glad that you came by this morning. Today is Bullies to Buddies Day, and of course, I've read the workbook myself several times over. And this morning, I was thinking about pulling together a lot of the things that have happened recently, the stuff that we talked about yesterday, the football players, the NFL guys that have abused the one guy that abused his wife, and the controversy over the fact that the wife fought back, so she deserved to fight, and then, of course, the switching of the four-year-old. Early this morning, I found out that both of those NFL stars, Peterson, has been invited back to play, and the other gentleman, Mr. Rice, it's looking like he's going to do training this season and be back in the game. Now, in all fairness, that's pretty fair. In all fairness, and I don't want to see their lives ruined because they made some bad decisions and lost their tempers, quite honestly. But I do want to see some ramifications, and there's been no talk of that. There's been no talk about counseling. There's been no talk about anything. What was said this morning, though, that made me very caught my attention, so to speak, the manager of, I don't keep track of which teams they are, you'll have to forgive me, I'm not a football fan, unless one of my kids are playing, but it's apparently all of the media coverage, of course, blew it out of proportion. That's shocking, I know, but it appears that after looking at all the evidence, everything that was done, all the pictures that were taken, etc., the young man who got a little carried away switching his four-year-old, the manager of the team said, we looked at everything. It's been, you know, kind of blown out of proportion, in essence, is what he said. So it brought me back to the bully book, and all of those things are bullying, you know that. If you're bigger than somebody else and take advantage of the fact that you're bigger than them, even if you are their mother or their father or their older sister or their aunt or their grandmother, whatever you are, if you get carried away, you can do that because you're bigger. And that part of it is being a bully. The act itself is not bullying. The act of violence is another story. Don't confuse the two. But it brought me to the back of the book, and I forgot about all these wonderful movies that Izzy has put in the book that actually teach us how to deal with, process abuse and bad treatment, and I forgot that I've read this two or three times, and it's really very wonderful. So we're going to share that this morning. I'm going to bring Shelley in, and Shelley's a bit of a movie buff, so I think she'll get a big kick out of this. And if any of the movies are movies that you've seen and you're listening this morning and have any input on the things we're going to talk about in regard to those movies, I'd love to hear from you. Good morning, Shel.
Well, good morning, Rainey.
How are you? Is your cold better?
Yeah, it's better. Still a little under the weather today, but much, much better than yesterday. I still don't have a lot of my strength back, but my throat feels better and, you know, so that kind of stuff. So definitely moving along in the right direction. How about you?
Well, that's good. I'm good. I have a lot of running around. Yesterday I left here right after the show and didn't get back here until about 7 o'clock last night. So today is going to be the same thing. And And then tomorrow, it's going to be the same thing. So, you know, doctor's appointments, doing things with different grandchildren that have got stuff going on. And it just, you know, and that hurry up and wait syndrome that you get. I was at the DMV yesterday for 3.5 hours. You know how that goes, all that stuff. Doctor's offices, good stuff like that. So, but I'm good. I you're going to love this because you are such a movie buff, and I very sadly love some movies. Some movies are my favorite, but I do not have instant recall like I hear so many other people. My kids can sit, I wish they were this good in school, they were not. They can sit and watch a movie that they haven't seen in 3 or 4 years, and I look at them and they're saying the words right along with the character.
Yep.
I can't. I there's no way in hell that I could do that. I remember the essence of things, like movies, but I don't remember it verbatim like other people do. But most of these movies I saw, and I get the where Izzy is going with this. This is from Izzy's workbook, Bullies to Buddies workbook, which, by the way, are available to people if you let me know that you'd like one. This workbook is so worn and torn from me using it for the past year and a half, you would not believe it. The first movie, Izzy's a little synopsis at the beginning of the film part says, sometimes movies can make things clearer than lectures. Here are a couple movies that I think would be great for showing kids the effectiveness of controlling anger. The Magnificent Seven. Do you remember the movie The Magnificent Seven, Shel?
No, actually, that's one I didn't.
Okay, 1960 is when it was made, so it's an oldie goldie. This classic has Yul Brynner heading a cast of other male movie giants. There is a marvelous bar scene illustrating the effectiveness of turning the other cheek. Since it is about a bunch of macho...
I did see that movie.
Gunslingers, remember?
I remember that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Since it is about a bunch of macho male gunslingers, I particularly recommend showing it to kids who hang out in gangs or otherwise believe in the importance of always aggressively standing up to anyone who challenges you. And it was. And that scene that you're remembering, I think, is what everybody remembers about that movie. It was a great movie. And then this is going to crack you up. You Don't Mess with the Zohan. Now, that was a pretty silly movie. This is my personal favorite Adam Sandler movie. It's hilarious, but probably can only be fully appreciated by people familiar with the Israeli culture. My reason for mentioning it here is the ending, in which the hero literally turns the other cheek and ends up creating peace with his mortal opponent. I remember that part, too. I thought it was a pretty silly movie myself. But I like that he pulls that out of it. And, of course, at the end of the day, it's what we talk about all the time. It is really what we want. It's sometimes, though, swallowing something that makes you feel like you are the loser. And I think it's all about reevaluating the actual description of a winner and a loser. And I think we're going to talk about that someday. Not today, because we won't get through all the movies, but realizing being a winner doesn't always mean what you think it does. And being a loser absolutely doesn't always mean what you think it is. And I think that's the hard part for people. Oh, you know, I had to be the bad guy. You hear people say these things all the time. Or, you know, I acted like it was no big deal, but my feelings were hurt. But, you know, I did it because I'm trying to be the bigger person. But they still feel like the loser, and they're resentful about it. So that's one of the things that I think that we have to work on letting go. Now, here's one I never heard of. It's called Safe, and it was made in 1995. This is a great movie by director Todd Haynes, though I suspect most people would find it boring. It has little real action. It is what we might expect to see if the anti-violence and entertainment advocates got their way. There is almost no aggression. Almost everyone talks pleasantly and is concerned with others' welfare. They are careful not to offend anyone. The only outward anger I recall is a woman who feels her safety is being threatened. Safe depicts the descent of a woman whose health spirals downward as she tries to regain her health by protecting herself from our toxic environment. I believe the point of the film is that society's current obsession with creating a safe life is the true danger. And I certainly second that motion. This is what the anti-bully crusade is trying to accomplish in our schools. Create an environment for them that is safe. And now I get the connection that he's trying to show us. And of course, Shelley and I, through our years at the Institute, met a lot of people who had issues with the environment. And many of them had allergies. Many of them had stuff going on. I think I talked about this on the show before, testing it so that I would have a little bit more compassion, because I would think to myself, a lot of times I walk in, I don't like the smell of someplace, I don't make a big deal of it. A lot of times I smell somebody's perfume and think to myself, oh my Lord, that's like overbearing. But I don't make a big deal of it, but I don't have those kind of allergies, and that's what I didn't grasp. So I walked myself through a store in the mall. And they don't do this anymore, but it was back when they were rushing up to you and spraying stuff on you. And I made a point to really pay attention to the smells and things like that. And I thought it helped me help the guests that came with those issues. But safe is a really, really big word. I mean, it's only four letters, but it's a really, really big word. And safe means something different to everybody. So he compares this movie to what they're trying to do in school with the bullying. The anti-bullying policies are concerned not with safety from knives, guns, and drugs, but from name-calling, social rejection, offensive gestures, rumors, and cyberbullying. In other words, anything that can make anyone feel bad. What we are trying to protect our children from today is real life. As though sparing them the necessity of learning how to deal with people who aren't saints is going to prepare them for the future. As the movie shows, the cure can be worse than the illness. Now, of all the things that I read in this, that's one of the most important facts. Yeah. I had a conversation with somebody last night, and we're going to talk about this next week on the show, about young children experimenting with sex. And, of course, the first thing that this mom wants to do is get rid of who she thinks the culprit is. And I kind of smiled to myself, and I remember the first time I came across. I was mortified. Don't get me wrong, Shell. I was very young, and I was like, oh, my God. And I practically fell apart, you know, knowing that that kind of experimentation was going on. And it went on in my own life. When I was a kid, my cousins and everybody's inquisitive about sex. So this mom said to me, well, we can't let him be here anymore. A 7-year-old, right?
Wow.
Because they have a 4- and a 5-year-old. And I said, you know, that's pretty much, you do have to get a handle on it. You do have to be aware. You do have to not make it easy for kids to spend alone time, boys and girls to spend alone time when they're in that age bracket. We've talked about that before. But instead of dealing with it, the kid isn't allowed there anymore. Now, for me, I guess that's one way to fix it, so that you're safe for the moment, but you're not safe for the future. You have to deal with it. So, and that's, of course, what Izzy's teaching us about, you know, teaching our kids to have skills, social skills,
right,
instead of just taking away, you know, the bad kids, because that's never going to happen.
Yeah, because
here's another one.
If you keep
a kid
in the bubble, yeah, if you keep a kid in the bubble his whole life and you protect him from from pollution, and you protect him from bad words, and you protect him from any ill treatment. What you just said is they develop no skills, and then when they're no longer in that bubble, they can't handle life at all. And that's one of the reasons why we have so many dysfunctional adults, because they were never taught as children how to cope with life, so they grew into adults that can't cope with life. You know, it doesn't – people say, oh, well, they'll grow out of it. No, you can't grow out of it. You either have the skills or you don't. And if you're not taught the skills, you can't just all of a sudden become an adult and acquire them. You know, you need to learn them as you're growing up, and then you use them as an adult. But that's where a lot of the fallacy is that, you know, people think it's a phase that kids will grow out of. And no, that's when they need to be taught it so they can carry it into their adult lives.
Exactly. It's just like everything else. You know, you put your right shoe on your right foot. It's the simple little things that are a part of our responsibility as the adults. And certainly, I guess enough emphasis isn't made on social skills because everybody thinks everybody's going to learn how to do their own thing. But there is still a left and a right foot with social graces. Some things fit into your social consciousness, and some things don't. And for some reason, we forget about all that. I mean, you know, it's important that you teach your children to be respectful of adults and other people. It's important that you teach them to come to you. I mean, Izzy taught us not to teach them to be tattletales. It's not about that. But like something like what this lady told me about last night, open communication is imperative. And we are going to have a show about sexual abuse. And it's horrible what goes on in some homes. And as much as I hate the topic, I think it's something that needs to be talked about because it's a lot more prevalent than everybody understands it is. So, but in this Safe movie, he's trying to show us safe is nice. It's a nice concept to know that your children are safe. That's why you put them in a car seat. That's why you immediately, the first time you take your dog for a walk, don't you spend time teaching your dog to not run in the road with the leash? I mean, mm-hmm. Safe in those kind of respects are one, safe to, you know, you cannot create a world where somebody doesn't walk up to you and say, you know, don't you think you should go on a diet, or can't you go to a doctor or something about your acne, or, and some of those things comes from friends, but it's not very safe environment as far as your feelings are concerned. So there's nothing you can do about that except for learn how to deal with it. So that's his whole point. Now, this movie I didn't watch because I figured it was going to be about bang 'em up kind of stuff because of the name. It's Crash. Have you ever seen the movie Crash, Shell?
Oh.
Say again?
No. What is that movie about?
It's directed by Paul Haggis. It's one of the most thoughtful, provoking films I have seen about racial prejudice. Be careful not to confuse it with another recent film with the same name. Oh, okay. So the one I was talking about was about car driving. And it is an ideal movie to use in educational programs about tolerance. It goes beyond the typical evil, racist, poor, innocent, victimized minority mentality that pervades many print and film representations of prejudice. It demonstrates how difficult it is to be free of racial prejudice. Minority members are just as blinded by their prejudice as the members of the majority. I'm going to read that one again because it's kind of confusing. Minority members are just as blinded by their prejudice as are members of the majority. Even those who attempt to fight against prejudice by overcompensating end up committing injustices. From the perspective of my Bullies to Buddies philosophy, the important thing about the movie is that every character who acts despicably feels not like a bully, but like a victim. Some may seem to us like bullies, but they act from the motivation of being victims. As I keep on insisting, if we want to make the world a better place, we need to end our crusade against bullies and start teaching people how to stop thinking like victims. And that is the essence of his whole program. It is the essence of his whole program. And I would agree. And you and I, through the years, have spent a lot of time with people who think, you know, I'm going to go out and eat worms kind of personalities, right?
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, and also all the self-help books that I've read in the past few years, actually going back about 15 years ago, because a lot of them that I read to when I was going through my SC and ministerialship, they were all about taking responsibility for how your life unfolds. Not having a victim conflict, complex, and not allowing someone to hurt your feelings. Nobody can hurt your feelings. Words can't hurt you. That old adage, you know, sticks and stones and that whole thing. You know, words really can't hurt you. What hurts you is your reaction to the words. So if somebody comes up and says something foul to you, if somebody come up and says something mean-spirited or just unkind, your reaction to that is what hurts you, not the words. So you can choose not to react in that way. And in the beginning, I had a really hard time with that concept because it's like, you know, our emotions and blah, blah, blah. But you really do have control over your emotions. And over the years, the more I read, and there's many different authors that write about this, the more I read about it, it started making sense to me, and I started grasping it, and I started realizing that it is something attainable for us. We really can control our emotions, although it may seem like it's not possible. You really can, and when you do, you live a much more serene and happy life because you start having outward compassion for people. When you see people acting badly, when you see people saying something mean to you, instead of feeling bad for yourself, you feel bad for them because it really takes an unhappy person to say unkind things. So if somebody's being mean to you, they're suffering on some level. Because when I'm in a good mood, when I'm feeling good, I have no inspiration to let a nasty word come out of my mouth. But if I'm not feeling well, if I'm irritable, which doesn't happen much anymore, but it used to for me when I was younger. And I remember that when I was either unhappy or frustrated about something, I could very easily blurt out a nasty comment if somebody came near me just because I was in a bad mood. And that is sort of a bully. That is being bullied. I'm in a bad mood, so I'm going to share it with you because now all of a sudden you're in my personal space. So I'm going to unload on you even though you didn't do anything to me. That's bullying. And we've all been there. We've all had bad days where we weren't feeling good and we took it out on another individual. But that is, in fact, bullying. And when you become self-aware and you become self-responsible, you start putting a little bit more control on your own behavior. And when you start doing that, you start finding that there's a lot more joy in life when you're not like a ship out on the water without a sail, just kind of letting the waves take you wherever. When you're running your own ship, when you've got a nice strong sail and you're holding the rudder and you're making the ship go where you want it to, you have a sense of control over life, and that makes you feel more at ease. And when you're more at ease, it's easier for you to deal with day-to-day issues and to be kinder to people. But the biggest message I got from all the books that I read, and it really imprinted on me, was that when somebody was being mean to me, they had to be unhappy on some level because a happy person cannot be mean. The two just don't go together. And it started inspiring compassion for me towards other people.
Well, that, you know, that's a knowledge. Everything that you just said, of course, it's not fair because I know you pretty good, but everything that you just said is, in my opinion, growing up. And most of us, not all of us, very sadly, but most of us do eventually pick up on those things that are hurting us and not helping us, that are about ourselves, about our own personalities. And I think, I personally have seen you make many changes in your life, and I've seen you grow a lot, and I've seen you let go, and I knew way back when that the issues that you would have with your anger and things like that came from old pain. And
yep.
Everything has a beginning and an end, even though it's sometimes hard to decipher where it is in some of the things we deal with. But if that kind of verbal abuse or inability to ever talk to anybody honestly becomes your way of life when you're very, very young, I can see where there would be pent-up anger, because you never, ever get to release your issues because you're always taking the brunt of someone else's. And that makes you angry. And well, it should. I'm not making excuses for all of us, but of course it makes us angry. Why shouldn't you have the same ability to air your dislikes and your discord like other people do minute to minute? So it is, that is the time when somebody should be coaching you on your social graces and saying to you, you know, you don't have to, whatever so-and-so is saying to you all the time is their stuff, not your stuff. Just let it go in one ear and go out the other. You don't need to get all excited about it or have a fist fight about it or, you know, or slash his tires or cry or anything. You just have to, like, say, that came out of their mouth. It shouldn't affect me unless I let it. It's their stuff. And that's an old line, and so many people use it, but it's so true, right?
It is true. It is true. And that's exactly what it is. And when people say something mean-spirited, They usually do it grabbing something that's a little bit truthful about you, but then over-exaggerating it in a mean way because they're trying to hurt you. Because on some level, they're feeling crappy, so it's, you know, like misery loves company is such a true adage. When people are feeling miserable, it's like they want everybody around them feeling miserable, you know? And it's kind of like not one of the nicer qualities that we have, and I say we because I've been there too, but it is a quality that we can absolutely rein in. It's a quality that when you do rein it in, you actually start feeling better about life. When you control that, I'm talking about doing it to other people, you start feeling more at ease with yourself. People say, oh, well, that must take a lot of effort, and that's exhausting, and, you know, I can't watch everything that comes out of my mouth. But actually, once you start doing it, then it becomes almost impossible to be mean-spirited, because it's almost like you have this sense about you that you start filtering things before they come out of your mouth, and you start being more at ease because you're not in this constant, like, being a jerk and then being okay and then being a jerk and then being okay, which is sort of a convoluted way to live, you know? When you start acting more consistently, you feel the benefit of it. It calms you down. And then things that people say to you kind of don't affect you much anymore because you've gotten to that more centered place. And I don't know if that's necessarily a part of growing up, because I know a lot of people that are older than me that still haven't come to any of those realizations. I think on my part, a lot of it came because I chose to educate myself, because I chose to seek this kind of information out. And I was inspired by a couple of authors, so I continued reading their books. And I think my transition was because I went there. I went to a self-help place in my life, and I started seeking this information out. And I ended up finding wonderful books on the subject. And I read each word, like I just picked up each word, and each word just impacted me. And it really started changing me. So I highly recommend books. They even have audio books now for people that just don't have time. You can get most books now available on CDs that you can pop in your car stereo. Some of the books I read lately, that's what I did. I had like almost an hour drive to work each way, and that's how I read my last three books. I got them on audio CDs, popped them in my car, and I listened to them while I was driving. And it was very, very beneficial. So there's, you know, there's a lot of different ways to improve ourselves and get a handle on this. But, you know, I highly recommend looking for self-help books on these types of subjects, and there's some amazing books out there. I can next time we do this, I'll look up some of my favorite titles and I can talk about them. But that's what turned the tide for me, was learning this information from people that had been there, because some of these people had tragic lives until they went through the transformation I did, and then they talked about how they learned it. They ran into a person or they read a book or something. So it really is, I think it's a choice. I'm not so sure it is just growing up, because we are so impacted by our family's dynamics, and some people come from extremely dysfunctional families as far as being very violent and argumentative, so they really don't have a good foundation on how to create this. It's not a matter of growing up. It's a matter of coming across those aha moments. You see a movie, like Izzy's talking about. You see a movie, and the characters act in a certain way, and you have an aha moment about your own life, or you read a book, or you read an article, and it impacts you. With me, it was literally one book called Peace Pilgrim. That was the first book that, it was a true story about this woman who walked all over the country for 25 years. An amazing story. I was actually kind of annoyed that we weren't taught this in school, because this woman's life is very inspirational, and she talks about anger in there. And she was the first one who had ever said this thing about when somebody's being mean to you, you should feel compassion for them, not allow it to make you feel bad, because nobody who's okay can be mean. And that was a major aha moment. I had just never thought of that concept before. It was, and it like stuck with me forever, you know. So with me, it was definitely the books and the movies that I chose to allow myself to be inspired by that made the biggest changes in me. And then you, of course, you were a great influence on me.
Yeah. Let me explain something about what I, when I say growing up, I don't mean getting taller, getting facial hair, getting boobs. I don't mean growing up like that. I don't mean the actual growing of it. I mean becoming a grown-up. The grown-ups, the adults, the people that are supposed to be running our world, a lot of them are not grown-ups.
Right, right.
My whole meaning behind the statement, some people don't grow up until they're 60, honey.
Yep.
You're supposed to be a grown-up by the time you're 18. And I know plenty of 40-year-olds that are still working on it. When I say grown-up, I'm talking about somebody who is comfortable in their own grown-up body, somebody who is aware of their own flaws and either working on them or living with them, and is able to accept the differences, the flaws, the points of views from others without having them affect them, unless they want them to. It's
right.
All about the choice that you're willing to make and willing to listen to. You can be hurt by the way somebody gazes at you, if that's the way you are. Somebody can turn around and look at you and then turn back around, and they might not even be seeing you, but they had this look on their face, and, oh, my God, did you see the look I just got from her? Or, oh, my God, did you see the look I just got from him? All stuff that you emanate from yourself. When I say grown-ups, I mean really grown-ups. I mean not just the fact that you got older and bigger, the fact that you really grew up. And it's an important place to be, and some of us do it quickly, and some of us, that's why all the belief in old souls and things like that. You meet a 7-year-old that can look at you and talk and shake their head, and you know that they're getting everything you're saying to them, And then you can take a 17-year-old and look at them, and you can tell by the blank stare on their face, they haven't got a damn thing, you said. Right? So we see those kind of people all the time. So it is our responsibility, because we all move at our own speed. It is our responsibility as parents and adults to help our kids transition into that growing up part. And again, it has nothing to do, their body grows on its own. It has nothing to do with that. It has to do with their, you know, what's going on inside, the growing up inside. And that's why I love, I don't think Izzy has ever, he said a couple things that I had to, like, think about and things like that, or written a couple things that I had to think about, but there's been very little that he said that I haven't been in complete and total agreement with. Now, that's hard to find. It really is. So, but this, I loved this. I'll have to find this Crash movie because I'd like to watch. Say that again?
Does he mention or elaborate on what actors are in that movie?
No, he doesn't. The only couple of these does he talk about the actors, and I got the feeling. He said it was made in 2005, and it was directed by Paul Haggis. But he doesn't really talk about who's in it. But we can probably look it up online. The next one we can find it. A Walk to Remember in 2002. This movie, starring teen singer Mandy Moore, is not your typical teen flick. Though overly sentimental and a bit drawn out at the end, this is a beautiful story of a girl who reforms a bully by living the principles I teach in this seminar. But she got her lessons from sources much older than myself. So I did see that movie. I watched that movie years ago with Crystal. And it is, he's right about some of the stuff that make the kids like to watch it. But the core of it was about turning a story around like that. And there are a few movies like that I've seen. The next one is Welcome to the Dollhouse, 1995, and this was like one of those off-the-wall kind of movies. This is a low-budget flick that won the Grand Jury Prize at the 1996 Sundance Film Festival. I know of no movie that more realistically portrays both the misery of victims of bullying and the dynamics of common sibling rivalry. Unlike other movies dealing with bullying, there is no glorification of victims or demonization of bullies. Everyone is portrayed mercilessly with all their human flaws. This gem of a movie
What's
is
the name
both
of that
custom-
movie?
It's called Welcome to the Dollhouse. It was made in 1995. This gem of is both touching and hilarious. When I watch it, I feel as though the writer went to my seminars and set out to put my teachings into film. I cannot recommend this movie highly enough. Just beware. If you only like movies with happy endings, this one is not for you.
Oh.
So that sounds like we'd like to watch as well. Mean Girls, there's one that I watched with Crystal, too, and even the boys watched a little bit of Mean Girls. I think it was just for the Mean Girls themselves, but they watched some of it. This is a cute teen comedy with great messages. It does a good job of showing that when you aggressively try to defeat bullies, you can become a bully yourself. It ends with good lessons on how to treat others. That's the same way I felt about that movie. Odd Girl Out, 2005. My 13-year-old daughter, Ayala, made me watch this with her. I was a bit reluctant because I wasn't in the mood to watch another film that stirs up hatred of bullies and sympathy for victims. Though it does a bit of both, I'm glad she made me watch it. It is quite realistic, though in real life the air doesn't get filled with sinister music whenever someone is thinking of being mean to us. Odd
Girl Out, directed by Tom McLaughlin, is based on a true story of a bright, talented high school student named Vanessa, played by Alexa Vega, who suddenly becomes a victim of bullying by her peers. There are some of the things I liked. Number one, it runs counter to the stereotype of victims as being kids who have some obvious difference or imperfection. The truth is anyone can become a victim of bullying. Number two, it shows the futility of parents and school administration's efforts to solve the problem for the kids. I know this is a movie that's used as ammunition by anti-bully crusaders. But why don't these crusaders get the message of the movie that adult intervention, as well as intentioned as it may be, is not the solution? The problem is ultimately solved by the victim herself. While the way she handled it wasn't exactly the way I would have counseled her, she still did an admirable job at the end and regained her dignity. This is a good movie to show groups of kids. However, if you do so, I hope you won't limit the discussion to how terrible it is to be a bully. Please use it to identify the mistakes Vanessa made and explain how she could have avoided her miseries by using the Bullies to Buddies rules. Poor Vanessa didn't have to risk killing herself in order to put an end to her suffering. Yeah, that's a lot of what the issues are today, too, is the somebody's pushed too far and pushed too far and pushed too far. I mean, you know, how many times have we talked about suicide with preteens and tweens and young teens? And that's what it is. There just don't seem to be any answers at the end of the road. 8 Mile, 2002, starring the white rap star Eminem. The movie is not for children. And if you do not tolerate profanity, violence, and sex, it is not for you either. I am often told that people in the inner cities can't let anyone get away with insulting them. This movie takes the lie out of that stereotype. It is about battles, contests held in front of audiences in which contestants take turns insulting each other with rap, with the best insulter winning. The contestants don't get upset by the insults. They admire those who are better than themselves, though they are not happy for losing. In the clinching finale, Eminem wins by doing a super Izzy tactic. Of course, he did not get the idea from me. I never watched that, but it's been on my TV before with the boys.
I've seen that movie. I know which one he's talking about. It actually, I was... There is a lot of all of what he said, the profanity and all the other nonsense, but I thought the acting was very well. I was actually surprised that Eminem was such a good actor. And I saw an underlying message in the movie, and it was the only reason I was able to tolerate the all the other background distraction, as you might say. It was very gritty, very real, but I actually found it to be a good movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I think the kids liked it, but, the only one I couldn't ever, I shouldn't say that, Josh and Austin and Spikey and Mikey are pretty, I've always kept a really, really open line of communication with my kids and my grandkids. Not that it's led me down any rosier path than anybody else, but I do have an open line of communication with them, and I literally can talk to them about anything. Now, whether or not they're always honest with me is another story. But I can say whatever I need to say and let them deal with it. And for me, that's important because I don't feel like sugarcoating some things is the way you should play that. But they've always liked... You know, the M&Ms and the, I can't remember the names of all the rappers. And they know that I hate that kind of profanity. I tell them all the time, you know, there's other ways to you know, get your point across and talk to people without talking like that. There's just really no need. And, I mean, I hear beautiful, young 13, 14-year-old girls who use the F word like they're saying duh. And it's the old school in me, I get that, because it doesn't seem to bother anybody else but me.
No, it bothers me.
Huh?
Bothers me too. If I have a group of kids cursing like that around me, I actually say something, and I have not had it once where they didn't apologize and moved on or just stopped using it.
Yeah. I get great response with my own kids, but I remember at the beach. This was probably 20 years ago. I had Spikey was a baby, the grandson Spikey. Nikki was a baby nephew. And I didn't have Mikey yet. He was too little. But it was just those two boys, and I would watch those when Chrissy and Spike and Patty and Clay were working. I was convalescing after my back surgery. And we're at the beach. And I've got the boys on a blanket, and they're playing in the water and digging sandcastles and stuff. And about five young kids came and sat behind us. And I'm not kidding you. I mean, it was disgusting. It wasn't just the F word. I mean, it was every four-letter word I ever heard in my life. And I turned around and I said, kids, please stop talking like that. These two little guys are babies. I think Nikki was four, and Spikey was like two. And they gave me a dirty look. Didn't want to be respectful at all. And I just turned back around and sat there. And it toned down a little bit, but then they got excited again and started talking. And I stood up and turned around and looked at them, and I said, stop it. And it took everybody totally by surprise and looked at me, kind of shocked, you know, like, what's this? Of course, I wasn't 60 then. I was 40 and a little bit more impressive in my stature, you might say. And I said, stop talking like that. If you're going to talk like that, go to another part of the beach. I was here first with these babies, and I'm not going to listen to the way you're talking. And they just sat there for a few minutes, and then he appeared to be the ringleader, said, come on, let's get the hell out of here. And they all got up and left. But I was like, why was that necessary? You know, I just didn't get that. But I think about it now and think I'm probably very lucky that they got up and walked away and didn't walk over and smack me or something, you know. But
they weren't taught any social graces. You know, when I was in my teens, all my friends used vile language, all of them. And so did I when I was with my friends. But I had enough self-awareness about me that when I was around adults or children, I didn't use that. I only used that language when I was talking with my friends, and I could be as guttural as the rest of them, you know, but we all talked like that, so it wasn't disrespectful amongst the other 15, 16, and 17-year-olds, but the minute I got around an adult, those words would not pass my lips. If I saw a little kid near me, those words did not pass my lips, and if I was in a mall or a shopping center or something like that, then I didn't talk like that. And if I was with my friends and they let a word slip, something like that, I would tell them. I'd say, hey, guys, you know, watch your language. You know, we're not, you know, wherever we used to talk like that. And they would, you know. So it's like we all had a level of respect that it was okay amongst ourselves, but it wasn't okay if an adult was around, and it wasn't okay if kids were around. And I don't know why that is not part of the sensitivity of this generation anymore. We were at the beach, again, it happened for us at the beach also, similar story to you, and it was about maybe 4 weeks ago, and I'm walking with my great-niece, Bailey, who's like just turned 2 years old, and Cody, who's five, and I'm walking with the two of them, and there's this guy on the beach calling to his family, and two of the women were with him already, he had a big family, and every other word is F, 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 F. I was like, so as I'm approaching this guy, because we were going to go sit down near them, and I just said, but I had a big smile on my face. I said, yo, I said, little ears here, and I'm pointing to Cody and Bailey, and the guy turns around, and he actually got embarrassed, and he put his hands over his mouth, and he goes, oh, so sorry, and he stopped, like, instantly, you know? And it's like, meanwhile, when I looked over at the blanket, he's got two little kids with him. So I guess he doesn't watch it around his own kids, but he is sensitive to the fact that other people don't like it. And instead of getting an attitude with me, he smiled because I was smiling but did apologize, and then he didn't say stuff like that anymore the entire time we were there. He watched his language. So there are people who do get it, and I would like to see more people go back to that level of respect. It's okay amongst people that don't care, because I was never disrespectful with my friends, and for whatever reason it was, they are, I don't know why I liked using that language, but with my friends it felt okay. But I did have, it was definitely part of my upbringing, of my social skills, of my sensitivity, that there were certain times and certain people that it wasn't appropriate in front of. And that's what's lacking today. Kids are more in free-for-all mode where everything is okay. And I think that's a huge disservice to kids today, that they're allowed to run rampant. I think a lot of kids aren't being taught the appropriate values. I think that's why bullying is on the rise. I think that's why there's so much upheaval at schools now, where kids are being meaner on a higher scale because they're not being taught certain social skills and values of how to treat other people, not to take things so seriously on themselves. You know, who cares if somebody disrespects you? Walk away from it. But no, they'll get a box cutter and cut somebody for disrespecting them. That's just nuts. And it's because there's no line in the sand anymore.
Yeah. Well, and again, it's because in some cases, in a lot of those cases, that's the way their parents are. That's what they see every day.
Exactly. Exactly.
And kids that you were just talking about that were with this guy who was polite to you, they're going to grow up, and the first time he walks out the front door and hears his older son say to his little daughter, maybe by now they're 11 and 10 or something like that, and says F you to her, he's going to want to smack him. And why? How does he dare? But he will. And then,
mm-hmm.
you know, I can't believe these kids, they're doing this and they're doing that. Well, excuse me, they're watching the video of you. So it what it is, Shell, and it's like everything else, you know, and I know that firsthand. But, you know, it's monkey see, monkey do, very sadly. Mm-hmm. Let me get a couple more of these movies done. I love this one because this was one of my favorite movies, Roxanne. This is a great comedy starring Steve Martin as a modern day.
Oh, yeah.
And Daryl Hannah as Roxanne. There is a wonderful scene in which Steve Martin gets insulted for his huge nose. And then he goes on a roll insulting himself about all kinds of other things in the process, making a fool of himself. Making a fool of him. Oh, I'm sorry. I can't turn pages, evidently. He then goes on a roll insulting about all kinds of other things, in the process making a fool of the person who insulted him. It is a terrific demonstration of how people use humor to handle insults about their imperfections. Now, let me say about that I know there are a lot of us that can overdo that. And it's so obvious that we're overdoing it, that I like it, because it's my MO, and somebody said to me the other day, why do you always, you know, you make a lot of fun of yourself? I said, I'm beating other people to the punch. And he's got this real hurt look on his face. This young man is very deep, and we have a lot of very deep conversations. And I said, honey, it's not a bad thing. It's just my way of coping. I know what my imperfections are. So I just figure I'll make sure you know that I know what they are so that you don't have to tell me about them. And he said, well, I guess that's one way of looking at it, but don't you think that's negative? And I said, only if that's the way you're going to take it. I don't feel it's negative. If you do, that's your stuff. And he was like, oh, so okay. So I believe in that to a degree, but I've also met people that take it overboard, and I fear that there are times when I take it too far as well. So having said that, that is...
added having people laugh with you and not at you. And
mm-hmm.
So if you're kind of putting it out there, it makes people comfortable with you. It makes them see that you're lighthearted and you have a sense of humor. And it's, you know, so it's a way of embracing people, you know. When you have somebody tease you, and I've seen this, you know, you have somebody tease another individual and they get all bent out of shape, people don't want to be around them anymore because they're too uptight, they're too easily to hurt. When you have somebody who's got a lot of humor about themselves, people like being around them, you know, and it like I said, it's laughing with you and not at you. So it really is kind of, like I said, as long as you don't take it too far, it is a healthy attitude to have, and it's something I've utilized also where if something's gone wrong, I'll be the first one to make fun of myself for that reason because I appreciate that when I see it in other people. It's one of the things I appreciated about you when I met you because you're very lighthearted with that, you know. And it's it definitely is a good quality to have to not take yourself so seriously and to be able to be, you know, to have a sense of humor about life. We all have foibles. So these are mine, you know. Start making fun of your own.
I agree with that. I'm on the show, honey. Can I call you right back? Last night. Bye. Sorry, everybody. We're in the middle of some kids, and I didn't want to miss that call. We're almost out of time, so I'm going to save the next, I think there's five or six more movies that are great, so we'll do those next week. But I want to say that I want to talk Thursday. Tomorrow we have a special guest. Raphael is going to be here. He's from the Sun Sentinel. He's a reporter. He does a lot of the courtroom activity now. And when I first met him was when my grandson got hurt, which was 2009. He's a great guy. And he confided in me not long after I met him that one of his boys, he has two boys and then he has an older daughter, that he was on the autistic spectrum. And I talked to him the other day, and he posts up on Facebook that can be controversial. I like his personality. He sees things for what they are. I don't always agree with everything, just like everybody, but I do appreciate the way he thinks about things. So I called him the other day, and I said, I want you to talk on the show. And he goes, oh, I'd love to. And he said, I'd like to talk about how people talk about autism and seem to get it, but because a lot of autistic children don't look like there's anything wrong with them, I mean, at face value, they look perfectly normal. It's not like they're in a wheelchair. It's not like, you know, they're impaired physically or anything. So consequently, there's a different edge on the way people do things for them or make things more doable for them, for the child itself. And he mentioned Disney World as one of the places. And I think this will be a very interesting conversation. And for those of you out there, there's a few of you that I've talked to you about your children with autism. I think this will be a great show for you to either participate in or at the very least listen to. And I think maybe some points can be brought up and maybe there's even something we can do to make those kind of things a little bit. I have one friend who never, ever takes their child anywhere because they just can't deal with the repercussions of it not being a suitable place for this child. That just breaks my heart. So I believe in this. I believe there's a way to make everybody fit. I mean, you know, we just need to understand the issues and work on them. So I look forward to that show, and I hope you will all join us. That is tomorrow morning, Wednesday morning, here at Renee's Heart to Heart. So, but for today, everybody go out and have a wonderful day. It looks like it might rain again this afternoon, but it's very hot and muggy in South Florida. So God bless everybody. Have a good day. Thanks, Shell. We'll talk soon.
Great. Thanks, Renee. Look forward to tomorrow's show, and everyone have a wonderful day. Take care.
Bye-bye.